If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and/or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool, so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Hello, everybody. We have a very special episode today. We have Lisa Burris, is the executive director of Turn Back Time. She has five children and is the adoptive mother of two with special needs. It is through her children that Lisa first recognized the fantastic effects that nature has as a great equalizer and healer. Lisa has created the concept of the nature-based education program for children of all abilities, building the infrastructure and business plan to make that a reality. So Lisa started the farm preschool back in 2012 with just three kiddos, a red shed, and a vision. She says, it has been a true pleasure to watch as the program has expanded from there. Turn Back Time now hosts 130 children per week. In May 2017, Lisa received a master's certificate in completion of the Antioch University Nature-Based Education and Forest School Kindergarten through the Early Education Department. Lisa holds a degree in human resources and has 30 years of experience in the field, as well as in business, administration, and accounting. As a pioneer in the field, watching nature-based education grow in popularity, it's been one of the most rewarding parts of her journey. Without further ado, Lisa Burris. Welcome, welcome, Lisa. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I cannot wait to learn more about your program and hear all about it. But before we begin, I just want to let our listeners know that this is an Outdoor Classrooms tour and talk, which means that our circle members in our community get access to the beautiful pictures that we're going to be looking at throughout this conversation. So if you are interested in becoming a circle member, please come over and join us. It's an incredible community. The only thing I can say about it is it feels like a family. But again, as we talk through the Turn Back Time program, we are going to be looking at these magnificent pictures. So that's just a reference to that. So again, welcome, Lisa. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you. I'm very excited. This is my first podcast. So
yay!
I'm excited. Yes.
So what inspired you to create Turn Back Time? Tell us a little bit about Turn Back Time and what that is.
Sure. So my husband and I have three biological children, and in 2001, we had two foster care siblings placed in our custody, and we subsequently adopted them. So when they were about 6 and 7, I was sort of struggling with keeping the job that I had and being their mom. And so I left my job at a medical device manufacturer. And while I was sort of transitioning away from that, I was working really hard at trying to help both of them figure out how to be in the world. They both have special needs. So we started to do these little afternoon adventures after school. And I had some experiences with my son, who is on the autism spectrum and has an intellectual disability, that they were profound experiences, that he just was able to socially interact better. His language was different when we were out in nature. So I did a quick Google search that, you know, just does nature help children with autism in language and socialization? And I found Richard Louv's book, Last Child in the Woods. And I think that that book is just a catalyst for so many people who really understand how important nature is for children. And so once I started reading that book, my husband and I started having these conversations, you know, we're both in our 60s, about what childhood looked like for us, particularly when it came to outdoor play and free play. So I just said to my husband, I want to sell our house and start a program for kids with special needs. So we did. We had no idea what the program would look like, but we ended up finding this beautiful 58-acre property in Paxton and just started our program very small. Actually, the picture here is one of the children is what we call the pioneers. It was one of our first three preschoolers, Dylan, who is now in high school and getting his driver's license. But we just knew that we wanted children to have the same childhood experience that we did outdoors. And so we created a space that has grown beyond what I could even imagine. And that's where Turn Back Time came from. The name was just like, let's go back to the way that it used to be for children, being outdoors, having some unstructured play, having some autonomy in their play, being able to take some risks and all of that. So here we are.
So it was really your own children that sparked this sort of crusade forward.
Yeah. And I think that particularly are my own children, but also really understanding. So my son in particular, you know, I know a lot of children who are involved in scouts and different things like that. I actually couldn't leave him there. And I wanted to be a place for parents who had nowhere to go with their children. So we, right from the very beginning, our program was built on inclusion. So we knew that we were going to be a place that children who struggled with challenging behaviors could be here and do it safely. And we've definitely done that. That's very much what we are known for, but we're an inclusion program. So we're not a program for children with special needs. Our program, we really believe, meets the needs of all children.
Wow. And just, I mean, I think you've already answered half of these questions, but so why thinking about just children today versus when we were growing up, why do you think that children need nature so much today versus, you know, more than ever, I guess?
Right. Well, I think we needed it back then, but we just got it naturally, right? It was part of your childhood experience for the most part. At least it was mine, and it very much was my husband's. But I think that, you know, parents, I just want to say before I even say any of the following things, that there is no judgment here on parents. But parents are, it's really difficult. Most parents are, you know, two parent families that have to go out and work. And so it's really difficult to figure out how to be able to get kids outside for the recommended amount of time. I think that that's one thing that is very challenging for parents. I also think that we've become a risk averse society. So we're very afraid of allowing children to take risks. And we actually believe that risk is very beneficial. I think that there is a mental health crisis that children are facing. I think there's a childhood obesity crisis that children are facing. And so when we run our programs, I always tell people, like, think of a big umbrella. So the overreaching goal is play. We want kids to just get outside and play. But under that umbrella of play, we're trying to meet all of those needs. We want to raise some environmental stewards and some farmers because that is a dying population. You know, I think the average age of a farmer at this point is somewhere around 59 or 60. And if we don't have farmers, we're not going to have food. You know, so all of those things I think are really important. And I think in a technological society where we value technology so much, some of this outdoor time is vanishing and children need it so much. And I actually think we're seeing the consequences of it. What does Richard Louv say, that we don't have attention deficit, we have nature deficit? Yeah. I think that's a little, you know, that's a little bit of an overarching statement, but I do think it is a little bit true. Because when we have a child with ADHD that comes to our program and is really struggling in a typical education setting, they actually thrive here. Yeah. They not only do they do well, they thrive here. They're like the leaders, and they, you know, because they have this opportunity to move their body and
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And what I love, and I just want to clarify that your campus is a farm.
Yes.
So maybe not everybody knows that, but you are a farm in Massachusetts, kind of close to Worcester.
Yes. So we're about probably just only about 6 or 7 miles from Tatnik Square, which was really just kind of really interesting because we had looked at so many properties and we feel so fortunate to have found a property that suited what we needed so close to Worcester. Yeah. Because it really is an opportunity for children in Worcester to be able to have an experience like this. I think a lot of rural children do get to go outside and play mm-hmm. often, just in their backyard. But here, we're so close to Worcester, and we're very grateful for that. So we have 58 acres, and we are a farm and forest school. We're very much a hybrid of all the, you know, all the nature preschool, the forest kindergarten, the farm school, you know, all of those things where we kind of mesh them all together. So we have a pretty extensive trail system. We have a really small waterfall. We have the kindergartners picnicking at the waterfall today. We have an active beaver pond. And then we have the farm, which has chickens, ducks, turkeys, some goats, rabbits, horses. And then sometimes we'll have pigs and different other animals that we raise for food. We don't have them right now, but we can occasionally do that as well.
Wow, that is amazing. And it's just amazing because you're right there. So you've spoken a lot about just the benefits of being and spending more time outside and how nature's supporting children's social, emotional. What about just nature-based education and, you know, when children come to you? You are saying you do a lot of, you know, blending.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. Yeah. So when we first started our program, I used to joke around and say, you know, we were get outside evangelists, right? Everybody, get your kids outside, get outside. Because we just felt like children weren't spending enough time outside. And actually, during and after the pandemic, what we really started to embrace was that nature is actually a legitimate way to teach children, right? So there, you can meet all of the state early childhood frameworks and standards outside. So we really embrace place-based education, emergent curriculum, and we're meeting our kindergartners have already met all of the kindergarten standards about 3 weeks ago that they would meet in a regular classroom, but we're doing it outside. And so what we've done is we've actually really worked hard over the years at developing a way for teachers to figure out how they're doing that. So we do a lot of photo documentation. And then once we do that photo documentation, then we're able to kind of back into all the standards that we've met. That also helps us so that, you know, when we get towards the end of the year, if we've missed some that don't come up, you know, naturally on the farm, that we're able to kind of integrate them into our curriculum. I know the kindergartners just created a small society, a town in the forest, and did a lot of map making, and they made their own flag so that we could get some of the civic standards that you need to meet in there with them. And so, yeah, we really utilize the space that we have here to document meeting the standards. But we know now, and I think a lot of organizations, a lot of schools have figured out that, especially in early childhood, it is very easy to meet the state standards.
Yeah, that's beautiful, beautiful. All right. So your inclusion, you've talked about that. Tell me more. Tell me more. Yes. Turn back time supports that all children.
Yes.
Tell me more.
Yeah. So as I said, very much from a personal motivation, I knew that this program was going to meet the needs of children who struggle with challenging behaviors because I could see the difference with the two children that we adopted in their behavior when they were outside. And very much allowing them their own autonomy in the space. We've developed really strong policies and procedures. We actually had a doctoral student doing their dissertation here a couple of years ago, and she told us that we're one of the only programs internationally that's built on inclusion. And one of the tricky parts of this is that nature-based education is going to draw a parent with children who struggle with challenging behaviors to them because children do better outside. And so what happens is when those children are drawn into that program, the program then isn't set up to meet the needs of the child. And then you get into some tricky dynamics because the program wasn't ready for that. And I think I did a keynote and I said, you know, equity and inclusion in nature-based settings, not if, but how. So in my opinion, this isn't a question that we should be saying like, oh, are you a good fit for our program, or are we going to take kids with challenging behaviors and special needs? I think it should be, we are absolutely going to do that. And how are we going to do that? How are we going to build policies and procedures? So some of the things that we do here that are really kind of a flagstone of our program is we actually only have three reasons for rules. So we start with creating a yes culture. So if you are being safe, respectful, and responsible, we're going to try to figure out how to get you, let you do what you need to do here. And that, I think, really helps children to feel like they have some choice and autonomy, and they are able to manage themselves better. The other thing that is really important for us here is that we believe that behavior is a form of communication 100% of the time. And so if a child is behaving in a way that's unexpected or not what you were hoping for, it's probably because they have an unmet need or they don't have the skill to do what you're asking them to do. So we have very low ratios. Our ratios for our program are 5 students to 1 teacher. Wow. And what that does is that allows some extra space and time for us to teach skill and to really be close by when we know we might have a student who might be impulsive or aggressive, and really helping them to work through some things. And we actually teach collaborative problem solving. So we teach them, hey, what's going on here? And try to help them be part of the solution. Mm-hmm. So I have a perfect example of a little boy who was really struggling with getting in line and would get in line and kind of do the domino effect to everybody else in line, and or he would run away. And so I said to him, hey, I noticed that you're having a hard time, because I'm like, okay, there's something going on. It could be easy to say, no, we're not doing that. We're not bumping into our friends, and just keep giving this directive, but it's happening every day. So right. There's definitely something going on. So I asked him what was happening, and he said, every time I get in line, I actually said it like this, every time I get in line, someone bumps me. And I said, oh, so how about if when you get in line, you and I can be the caboose and we stand back so no one can bump you? And he literally never ran away and never bumped into his friends again. So there was like a need there that he wasn't able to express without some conversation happening. So I think that's really important, is to look at the lens of behavior as like, okay, what's behind this? What's underneath it? I think having the low teacher to student ratio is extremely important, or you're going to have teacher burnout and things are going to be unsafe because you're in obviously a risky environment. And then you're teaching children that we're building trust in relationships. So if you want to do some of these risky things like use tools or play on, you know, climb the tree, then you are going to have to have this relationship of trust, or we can't make that happen. And then the last part of it is just, you know, we don't use certain types of language. So we don't say be careful, or we don't put kids up in trees. We don't take them down. It's very much like, what are you capable of right now? And tell me, what's your plan? Like, how is this going to work out safely? Have you thought this through? So I think really making them part of the decision-making process on what happens really leads to these amazing teacher-child relationships that you can really help to, you know, deal with some of the things that might come up.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, it's beautiful, really thinking about all those elements. So here we are building I love how you said it's like an umbrella.
Yeah,
I went to your website. You have an amazing amount of different programs. So how has this evolved? I mean, I remember you telling me how little it was when you started.
Yes. Yeah. So we started as, you know, doing the summer camp, a really small summer camp. And I remember trying to get insurance, and the insurance agent was like, what are you going to do? I don't even understand this. And I was like, well, he said, is it a camp or is it a school? And I'm like, yeah. It's all of those, like, you know, so we started running just like family events and doing a small camp. And a couple of parents were at this family event and they said, you need to open a preschool. If you open a preschool, we'll send our kids here. So yeah, we started with 3 preschoolers, and we always have 2 teachers, no matter what kind of program we run. So it was hilarious because some days it would be one preschooler and 2 teachers, and we'd be like, so what do you want to do today? You know. Very small program, but we just started to grow. I think we started in September with 3 and by April had 9, I think. So we really hit a nerve, I think, of like parents are really looking for something like this. And then as we were doing the preschool, we started to have people reaching out asking about homeschool. So we added homeschool. And then I think, again, all of that was growing, really solidifying right before the pandemic. We had built a large barn with a classroom. We had 15 students every day in the morning and maybe 12 to 15 in the afternoon. And then the pandemic came.
Oh.
And that was like just catapulted us into, what are you doing? We need this. We need this. We need this. So we,
know,
we hired more staff. We built more buildings. So now we have 45 students in the morning. We have 2 preschool and 1 kindergarten class. And then we have an afternoon preschool with 10 students and a homeschool class with 15 in the afternoon, doing our summer camps, family farm time. We started to do young adults with disabilities job skills training because that was, again, really important to me because my son, you know, is now an adult and recognized that, you know, even adults with disabilities want a diverse work opportunity. So we really wanted to offer something like that. And so we've just continued to grow as the community lets us know what they need. I know right now we've been talking a lot about professional development and helping maybe public schools teachers imagine how this might work for them. But yes, yeah, so we really, I think we try to, this needs to be a community space where people are kind of letting us know what our next steps might be, because that's what we're all about. Like, we really want to meet the needs of the community.
I mean, did you ever think when you sold your house that this is the road, the path and the road that you would be going? I mean, it's just sort of actually an incredible story. And,
yeah.
And that, and just the community is like, okay, you know, let's build another thing or another.
So true. I don't even know what my expectations were beyond, I really believed though that there was going to be a need, that we were going to meet a need. I really did believe that. I don't think that I ever, and I had so much passion for it. And I think that really drew people in. And I remember when we built the barn in 2018, I was talking to a teacher at Bancroft School. Their seniors did their senior projects here every May. And I remember telling him that I just felt like the barn really meant something for who we were. And I just kept taking my hands and lifting them up like I was building the barn, you know, with this motion. And I said, I don't know why I keep doing that. And he started to laugh. And he said, because I think what you understand is that all of us who were really in all in with you before this building was built, we now know that this is permanent, that you're here to stay, that this is not going away. And that just touched me so much because he really understood what I was feeling, that this was a really important place for people and they needed to understand that we were going to be here, right? That it wasn't just a temporary thing that we were like, oh, how's this going to go? And I think that as we, I did have a lot of anxiety the first few years, you know, like, what are we doing? And are we, you know, are we doing the right things here? Are we going in the right direction? But I just kept trying to lean into, if something didn't work, we pivoted, right? And we just said, okay, this isn't working. Let's move here. And really, like I said, being, trying to be in tune with our community. This is a place where people have a voice and we, that's really important.
Mm. Oh, I just got goosebumps. So has there been like a biggest challenge? I mean, granted, we all know that COVID was probably, was maybe the biggest, but was there another biggest challenge in building and sustaining this work? I mean, over the years?
Yeah, I think that building, just from literal building perspective, we took on a project that we built 2 yurts, some cabins and a bathhouse to house some of our classrooms, but also some WPI students that were doing farm stay collaborations here. So they slept on the farm. And we had this project in the works for a few weeks. They've been helping us build the farm for years. They've been doing all these projects like building classrooms and helping us with gardens and rainwater catchment systems. And so we created this collaboration with them to say, okay, your students can actually come and stay here, have an immersive experience, And then just as we were getting ready to build, the pandemic hit and the costs skyrocketed. So we were really in a position of like, do we not do this or do we move forward and do it anyway, even though the costs are triple what we were expecting? And we did move forward. And that has been a challenge to kind of try to pay off some of that because we weren't expecting to end up with a big debt. I think that was one big challenge. And then I think in the beginning, honestly, the challenge was more a personal one of, you know, sometimes fear and anxiety of like, what am I doing? And this is this has turned into such a big thing. But I think that the pandemic, that's where we had the benefit of the pandemic, is that we ended up with such a great staff. You know, we now have, before it was, you know, three or four people worked here. Now we have, you know, anywhere from 12 to 15 people working here. And I feel like the load is spread now where it doesn't feel like it's all on me or my family to make sure that this goes, right? This is now, again, a community place and organization. We have a PTO now. I was like, what?
That's what you were saying when I...
I was like, that is like beyond me. We have a wonderful board of directors. And so I think the big challenge was like, again, my personal, you know, fear and anxiety about the success of it and were we doing the right things? And then I think the build for the yurts was really a tough one. That was like, but it all works out. It just keeps working out. So that tells me we're on the right track.
You are on the right track. And again, we forget to mention all these amazing pictures. So little guy looking at, is this the goat?
Yes, that's an Angora goat. Yeah.
Angora. I'm like, it has to be a different type of goat. So any memorable success stories or just what makes the, I mean, you've been talking about, I don't know, I have to come out and visit.
You need to. It would be great. Yeah. I think the biggest success stories that I feel are the, and again, this is probably a personal, you know, I have just like it hits a chord with me personally, but I would say that every single summer we have several children who come to summer camp here that actually cannot be successful anywhere else. And some of them are, they're here and they're doing it right. And they're figuring it out and it still is challenging. We might even have a one-on-one staff with them, but others like, literally children who can't go anywhere else that they're thriving and they're the leaders. And we're like, okay, so-and-so, let's tell everybody all about the salamander you just caught, or what do we need to do with the pony right now? How do you, and they know everything about it. And I think that for me, that really resonates with me because I think that in education, we've become very single-minded and we look at language and math as like, you know, Howard Gardner talks about his theory of multiple intelligences, right? And I think that we're really missing children who really have this natural intelligence for the world around them and are really gifted in this way. And when they go into a classroom, they're very much hearing, you know, you're a lot, sit down. That's enough. We're not doing that here. And when they come here, what they hear, we call them rock star moments, is, you know, you're incredible. And I never even knew that you just taught me something. And I think it really, to me, it's just so heartwarming to see kids who really are struggling and they're just come here and it's just easy for them. And that makes me feel so happy.
Oh, I'm sure. It's just the whole motivation of selling your house and starting this up, and here you are, and now it's just thriving, and then it's just keeps thriving even more because people are saying, no, we need this, we need this, we need this, then to not just make it, oh, it's just another farm or whatever. It's special and unique because you are serving children that wouldn't be able to go to different programs. So it's very cool.
Thank you.
It's very cool. So thinking about just that community and collaboration, I mean, all this throughout this whole conversation, you've been talking about that how your community leads you. Yes. And I absolutely love this picture. It may not be a community picture, but they've got all these kids that they're barefoot. Can you describe first the picture and then go in a little bit more about community and collaboration?
Yes. So, well, I think that this picture really, this is at the beaver pond, actually. We have an active beaver pond. It's one of the children's favorite places. And I think what this picture really describes is something that I feel like has vanished from early childhood, from childhood in general, is going barefoot, getting muddy, right? Having this ability to explore on your own, having this trusting relationship with an adult that, you know, I'm right here if you need me, but you are able to kind of go into this situation the way that you need to. So, you know, you can see some of them are balancing on the logs. The kids on the left, the three gathered on the left, are actually in the water. You can't really see that, but they're in about, you know, 6 or 8 inches of mucky water, and they're trying to catch frogs and maybe even leeches. I don't know, but I know. And so we, you know, we actually believe that risk is beneficial and that it really teaches children how to take care of themselves. But I think that this picture just shows how much you can trust children and that they are really know how to take care of themselves if you help to teach them and guide them. So I love one thing about the beaver pond is we didn't even know it was there when we bought the property because there was 3 feet of snow on the ground. And you couldn't really get to it because it was all wooded. So I remember my husband coming back about 4 months after we bought the property and being like, wait till you see what I found. And it is a, we have destinations. The beaver pond is a destination on the farm. So the kids are like, can we go, you know, and then the summer they're picking blueberries and catching frogs. And I'm like, again, I'm 62. That's like what childhood is to me. And I feel so grateful that we can offer that to children and very, very thankful. So yeah, so I think with the community and collaboration, we would never be where we are without community. And I think it's a really important thing for me. I need that personally. I'm not someone who's going to be in an isolated job. I need people. One of the women who's going to be taking over as director, Katie Baker, has been involved. Actually, this is her youngest son in the blue. She has been involved since 2013. Her husband was on our board. Then she joined our board when he resigned. She's been consulting. She closed her daycare at the pandemic to come work here. And so I think those relationships that I had all along were invaluable for myself, for me personally, but also for the farm. So we have student interns from Anna Maria, Assumption, Worcester State, Clark University, Quinsigamond Community College. We have this collaboration with WPI that has literally built so many parts of our farm. It's incredible. We are constantly looking for opportunities to host families that maybe their kids can't come for the preschool because it doesn't work for them financially or for their schedule. So we work with the CFCE, the Worcester Family Partnership, just always looking for ways to do family events. We have family picnics on the farm. We have open, you know, family days. We had a mud day last February. I think it was like, it just was a random warm February day. And the director was like, it's going to be muddy. Let's just do an open house. And I think like 50 people came to mud day. And it was awesome. So So I think that collaboration is super important to us.
Yeah, I'm exhausted thinking about it.
Yeah.
Again, and then important to outdoor education, then you're feeding, it's that domino effect. And that now you not only are helping, the kids are thriving where you are, but then that's a ripple and domino effect that carries them at home. And then also you had mentioned previously about really kind of branching out and trying to help schools.
Yes.
Create outdoor classrooms. That's sort of one of my visions as well. Is like, what if every single school and every single child in a school had access to an outdoor classroom? What would that
be? So amazing. Yeah.
So tell me your vision.
Yeah. Well, I really think that outdoor education is important. And I know there are a lot of countries that are doing it and doing it very well. And they recognize the importance of it, particularly up to the age of 6 or 7. And I think that honestly, a lot of the barrier is teachers just don't understand how it would work, right? And I think that is something that we can really help with to help them understand. And I also really acknowledge that I know that not everybody is going to go buy 58 acres and start a farm, right? That's not how it's going to look. But there are ways to do just even a very small part of your backyard or part of your classroom for your school to add some of these elements that really change how children play. I just feel like there's studies that show that children play differently on a blacktop than they do in a forest or yeah. out in nature. It's really, I think, very important for people to recognize that this is a developmental need. And I know that the state of Massachusetts, the Massachusetts Department of Early Education and Care, is really acknowledging that. And I think that that is really, for me, as someone who really feels like this work is so important, to see that it's going to be replicated in other places, I think is just fantastic, because it's, I just believe that it's the way to go.
Do you think it's growing?
I mean, do you think it's growing?
Our movement is making it, like all of what we're doing and talking, and do you think it's making a difference? You feel like it's growing?
Yeah, 100%. So when we started, there were 25 registered nature preschools in the country. And I think there are about 1,100, maybe even more. That was the last time I checked. So I absolutely think it's growing. I think that the difficult part of this is that a lot of times teachers in many programs, mostly public, honestly, some private schools are really, like, even though they might not be a nature-based program, they understand child-led play, they understand being outdoors and all of those things. But I think that the real difficulty in public school is that they're giving two conflicting agendas that they're trying to meet. And that's very difficult for them. And I totally understand that. Actually, some of our parents whose kids came here for preschool have just started to try to remove screens from the K-2 classrooms in the city of Worcester. And I think a lot of that was inspired by the early childhood education that their children got here and the way that they recognize the importance of that play and stuff. So I do think it's growing. I do think that we can't give up, though, and we can't release the pressure, because I do think that, you know, the pendulum always swings, right? And if we don't really stay on this, then I feel like it can just swing, you know, right back into again.
Absolutely. So in terms of your future vision, I know we talked about this offline a little bit and why you have a director now. Can you tell me a little bit about your vision for the future of even outdoor education, but also your dreams for Turn Back Time?
Yes. So our staff has grown, and I definitely, you know, the farm really consumed more than a decade of my life. And if you can only imagine from what we've discussed today, in a really big way. But I am so grateful now that we're spreading that is kind of being spread out among multiple people versus just me. And so, yes, we have Katie Baker is the acting director of Turn Back Time. I'm the founder and executive director. So I handle now a lot of the financial and registration stuff. And then Veda Blue is the assistant director. Both of them have their master's degree in place-based education and a certificate in forest kindergarten and nature preschool from Antioch University. So they are 100% ready for to continue, because this is going to be, right, my life's work. That sounds so corny, but
this is my legacy,
and I don't want it to disappear when I retire. So I think I'm so grateful to them. And then I just think the future of outdoor, I would love to see every family have the opportunity to have their child participate in nature-based preschool, possibly kindergarten, if they want it. So I think just like they do in like the Scandinavian countries, you can choose in Finland, which I'm Finnish. My grandfather was born there. So you can choose, you know, a forest nature kindergarten up until the age of 7. That's your public school choice. You can make that choice for yourself, for your family. So I would love to lean in that direction. At the very least, I would love to see, and I think that the Massachusetts Department of Early Education and Care is really kind of giving this directive of like, kids need to be outside. They need to be playing outside. They need to be moving their body. They need to be in nature, and really helping to understand that it's not developmentally appropriate for a 4-year-old to be sitting at a table doing worksheets. That's not what they should be doing. That's not their work for right now. Eventually they're going to get there and that's going to be their work, but that's not their work for now. So I think that that's what I would love to see, is that this, again, like you asked, if it's spreading, right? That this is really, even in colleges, this is being taught, right? That this that's, is important.
I'm like, yes.
Yes.
I'm like, because it just makes so much sense that this is this should be taught as part of early education, even up until yes. I even think, like, how can we get it into middle school? How can we get it into high school? How can we even have it be a part of that training? So then when students are coming out of their training, they're going into schools that have existing outdoor classrooms. And it's right. like, oh, yeah, it's a no-brainer. It's like, it should just be, I just pray in my lifetime that we can get to that point that it's just a no-brainer. Oh, it's there. Yeah. It's there. It's like it is in Finland. So,
well, I think, too, from the perspective of, like, we can look at developmental needs, but also let's look at, like, even environmental conservation, right? If you want children to grow up to want to protect the earth, then you need to give them a passion, right? They need to have an emotional experience with someone guiding them and teaching them. And that is what happens in nature-based education, right? That the kids are there and they're having these emotional experiences that they're able to have a mentor right there guiding them. And they're going to grow up and be like, hey, don't knock down my forest or don't destroy my beaver pond, or, you know, they're going to grow up and be environmental stewards. And that isn't going to come from that one-time visit to a nature center once a year.
The field trip, right.
The field trip. It's not going to come from that. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. And I'm so glad you said that, because that is truly the, you know, really understanding what our why is.
Yes.
And I love that you bring in the fact that you're on a farm. And if we don't get kids to be even excited about growing food or understand that food just doesn't come from the grocery store.
Right.
We're not going to have a generation of farmers. And you said something, you said some statistics on our, you know, our farmers are age 50, 60.
Yeah.
We don't have.
I think they're almost, farmers. The last time I checked, the average age of a farmer was 59.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sort of scary to think about. So
it is,
you know, and I do feel like we're in an age where we need to be growing food in our backyards and starting victory gardens and things like that. And so really incorporating that into our outdoor classrooms, whether they're in our schools or our backyards, and all of that is so vital right now. And I feel like there is still a culture of people, and again, no judgment, but that we're asleep.
Yeah.
We're kind of asleep at the wheel.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like that feeling of, come on, there's an urgency to it. And I think one of the interviews I've done was a gentleman called it edutainment. It's almost like we have to be entertaining, but also educational. So to get that message.
I call it hipster farming. I said, you know, you've got to make this attractive for people who maybe this isn't like really. This isn't their hill to die on, right? Like, maybe that's not their thing, and I understand that. But if you make it attractive, then they will come. And then I've had parents be like, you know, I'm going to go outside till I met you, and you know, like just really embracing it. And now, you know, their 8-year-old's got them hiking right every weekend, and that kind of thing, or starting a garden or something like that. So yeah, I really think that I get that whole edutainment thing. Like, you do have to make it attractive and trendy to a certain degree. And then once people get there, I really believe that they see the benefits and they understand it. And then they're so supportive of what you're doing. And you can just, when you have that opportunity, like when we have someone who's here for the whole year, we have this amazing opportunity to teach throughout the whole year, right? We're doing education on ticks and poison ivy and sunscreen and bug spray and how to keep your eggs once you take them from the coop. And like, it's just all these opportunities every day to discuss and chat with parents about what's happening. And they grow and learn from that too.
Yeah. And what a gift. Oh my goodness, what a gift. So, future vision, if you could change one thing about education today, and we've talked about a zillion already.
Yeah.
Something maybe we haven't talked about. What would that be?
I would take the pressure off of teachers in early childhood to be meeting standards that are not developmentally appropriate. And really looking at the research, right? Where sometimes we're doing things and I'm like, this is not even a research-backed idea that you have that's happening right here, you know? So, but I think teachers are like, what are we supposed to do? This is what we're being told to do. And of course they have to do their job. You know, I'm not, you know, I don't hold fault for them at all. But I think that I really wish that people would be looking at what is developmentally appropriate and what has, does the research show? Research shows that children need to be outside. They need recess, right? We're taking away recess for, you know, so just really helping to give teachers a little bit more freedom to actually teach in a way that meets the needs of children.
Yeah, that's so right on. Yeah. And what gives you hope? When you look at the next generation.
So, yeah. So the biggest thing that gives me hope is the recent announcement by the Massachusetts Department of Early Education and Care. They just started this initiative called Outdoor Start. And they actually have this website that educators can go to, parents can go to. But it's the reason that I love it is because it, first of all, addresses the issue that children need to be outside and playing. They need more play. Play is learning. Play is their work. That's how they do everything. That's how they learn, heal, grow, all of it. And then it gives the research that says why this is really important. It gives resources for parents and teachers to go to. And then it lists programs in the area. And I think that list will continue to grow as people find out about this website. They can go to it and see. And I think that if people really use that as a tool to help change their, I always say, you know, we all have our circle of influence, right? I'm not going to go and change the world in an instant, but if I can have this influence on the people around me, and then they're going to take that and influence the people around them. And so I think if educators and parents use this website to really affect change that they might want to happen in their schools and in their homes, that it will really have a huge impact.
I'm so glad you brought that up. So, favorite place on the farm?
Waterfall, 100%. I mean, it isn't even 2 feet. It's just so small, but it's just, I don't know. It's just so peaceful.
The sound and the...
Yes.
It's incredible that you have a waterfall in Worcester.
I know, right?
Season, favorite season at Turnback Time?
I always say everybody loves the farm when it's 70 and sunny. Right. It's a little bit harder when it's like -2 and the snow and wind and like, yeah. So I think it's, yeah, this will probably be my favorite season coming into the next couple of months. Although I will tell you, being on a farm, this is a time where you're like, don't look left, don't look right, because you have so much to do right now that it's not even, yeah.
So favorite outdoor childhood memory.
So this is a really interesting story. I did not know when we bought this property that I actually grew up on the property across the street from here. My great-grandparents, who are from Finland, had a garden there, and there was a pond there that we used to fish in, and there was a stream, and my brother and I would play in that stream all day long as they were doing the gardening. But I was young and didn't really, I knew that the land was in Paxton, but you know, I was in my 50s when we bought this property. I wasn't really putting it all together. And my dad said, wait, where is it? And I told him. And he said, Mumu and Papa's land is right across the street. So that is, I really believe that that is like something that when I think about that, I really believe that that's what kind of, that was a seed that really motivated me to do this work, because it was incredible, the memories that my brother and I barefoot in the stream. Sometimes the water would be so cold that you'd be like hopping up and down, but you didn't want to get out of the water.
Gosh.
And yeah. Yeah.
So that's like serendipitous. That's like the universe.
When people hear that, they're like, are you serious? And I was like, yeah. And I didn't know it when we put the offer in. And then my dad told me, and the woman who sold us the house, she was 88. And I was able to give her a picture of her now deceased husband when he was 5. Because he was his parents were best friends with my great grandparents. So yeah, it was just incredible.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Wow. So what's one lesson that nature continually teaches you?
Resilience. That we just all, it teaches resilience to myself, to my staff, to the children. We're just constantly growing. And I think that that's an amazing thing, because we all need to grow.
And you said a key word earlier, which was when something comes up, you just pivot.
Yes.
To that beautiful word. I love that word. So when do you feel most connected to your purpose?
I think that when we can really have an influence on a child who is really struggling and can really affect their lives and really help them to feel like they are amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are amazing.
This picture here, this guy has a frog.
Giant frog. Yeah.
That's
a
huge
frog. And everybody did selfies with the frog that day. We even have one of our staff, Katie Baker, has a selfie with the frog.
That's a big one.
Yes, huge.
So I think this is my final question. If you were to give one seed of inspiration to either a teacher, educator, parent, leader, what would that be?
I think it's just to start small and don't overwhelm yourself, but just really start small and just try to make small changes that will, I think that'll be amazing for a teacher, an educator, a parent. They'll feel it too, not just the kids, mm-hmm. right? If they can just slowly start to recognize the importance of this and make small little changes. You know, I think someone had a website, I think it's still around 1,000 hours in a year, trying to spend little bits outside, go for a walk, notice something in your backyard, you know, help your children to feel that connection, I think is where I would start.
That's beautiful. Look at these kids hanging out on the
tree. I know.
I love it. I love it. And there you are. So where can we find you? All your information will be in the show notes, but tell us anyway.
Yeah. We have a website. We have a presence on Facebook and Instagram. We have an amazing woman who runs our social media page. She's fantastic, beautiful writer. So you can find us on Instagram, on Facebook, and then on our website.
Perfect.
And come visit us.
Yes. I'm coming out for sure.
Yeah.
So thank you.
I could talk to you all day long. Thanks, Victoria.
I thank you. And thank you for this beautiful, beautiful work you're doing.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And you too.
Before you go, I want to share an invitation. If you are an educator who knows outdoor learning matters, but you want more structure, confidence, and support, the Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp might be exactly what you need right now. This is a 5-week online foundations course and is the first step in our Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. Each week, we focus on one of the 5 phases of teaching outdoors, helping you build a strong, sustainable rhythm for your outdoor classroom. You'll get pre-recorded lessons inside a private portal that you can move through at your own pace, along with 5 weekly live Zoom sessions where we come together to reflect, ask questions, and connect with other educators from all over the country doing this work. If you're curious whether the bootcamp is the right fit for you, I'd love to talk to you. You can schedule a one-on-one discovery call with me, Victoria, and we'll think through it together. Head on over to our website to learn more, or we'll have the link in the show notes as well, and see when the next Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp cohort is opening. Thanks for listening and for the work that you're doing to bring learning back into the relationship with nature. So P.S., if you are a Circle member and you are interested in taking the Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp, you get $100 off the price. So there are huge discounts for joining our Circle membership community. So again, if you have any questions about this, schedule that one-on-one call with me, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Talk to you soon. Bye.